This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. A stray dog shot with two arrows and kittens sealed in a jar. These are not fictional horror stories, but actual incidents that happened here in Malaysia. There has been a rise in reported cases of animal cruelty in recent years around Selangor, with 530 cases reported last year. I'm joined now by Lorna Fisher, Chief Operating Officer of SPCA Selangor, to discuss the work done by the organisation and to hear her thoughts on the need for an animal welfare law here in Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Lorna.
Thanks for having me.
So, how did you get involved with the Selangor SPCA?
Well, I've been in Malaysia 15 years now and involved in horses, dogs. I've been an animal trainer and an animal advocate all my life. And SPCA, 18 months ago, closed the old shelter and looked to building their new centre, and we're here to try and change the game. And I was brought on board, I hope, to support and lead that change.
And so you said 15 years in Malaysia. Have you been involved with SPCA all that while, in some capacity or another?
Strangely enough, no. I've been involved in training and working with animals. And I admit that at the time, I was always very concerned that the welfare agenda was going nowhere. And this, to me, was the golden opportunity to really make a difference. And that's when I stepped up and said, now's the time to try.
And could you briefly, share the history of the SPCA in Malaysia?
Well, the SPCA is actually the oldest animal welfare organisation in Malaysia. We've been travelling now for 60 years. Started, as all of them do, with some very, very determined and wonderful founder members who started off with the two kennels, six dogs that became 25 dogs, 30 cats, and on and on and on until, we've peaked at sort of 600 plus animals before we closed the old shelter.
So right now then, how many animals currently call SPCA Selangor home?
Well, at the moment, home is camping out in a bungalow.
It's not a bad home to be in.
So therefore, the actual animals within our managed adoption program on site are about 25, 30. We've got a further 15, 20 being looked after by our wonderful fosterers. And then we've got the 150 animals that are on our waiting list and are being looked after at home until we can bring them in.
And what types of animals does SPCA Selangor generally respond to?
The highest percentage of calls for help are with dogs, and then cats follow very closely behind that. And we also have guinea pigs, rabbits, pythons, monkeys, sugar gliders. So we are the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So we do our best to help with any animal that's in distress.
And when you say calls, what kinds of calls, what forms do those calls usually come in? Are they concerned citizens, or are they people, finding themselves unable to cope? What does it tend to be?
I think you can probably divide it into three quite distinct sections. You've got the group of people who are calling us to say, they're concerned citizens, as you described them. I'm seeing this poor animal walking down the road. It's been run over by a car. Please help. Then we get the group that, I live next door to a market. Everybody feeds the cats. Nobody's neutering them. There's kittens everywhere. Somebody's got to sort the problem out. And then we have the final group, which is, I got this dog, I thought I was doing the right thing, and now it's all gone wrong, and what am I going to do?
Moving on to funding, because that's always a challenge, I'm sure. How do you cover your operational costs?
By funding. Fundraising, constantly. I think maybe one of the things that most people don't recognise is we do not get any grants. We do not get any government help. It's entirely everybody's willingness to give us funds. And I think it's important that people want us to do more and more. I know they do. And we can only do as much as the funds we get given. So at the moment, I would say we are 50-50. We spend 50% of our time fundraising so we can spend the other 50% of our time doing the job.
And do you find that people are responding to that call for more funds? Because I think, by and large, whenever you look at shelters in particular, you find that there is a call for both time as well as funds. And while people would love to give both, I think more often than not, they can really only afford to give one or the other.
Absolutely. And, we're no different in that, of course, we would love people who can give us their time. The animals appreciate that too. But we also need money. We've got to run staff. We've got to run vans on the road. We've got to do more. And the answer is we're always, more people are asking for more people to help. And one of the things I've always said is we've got how many million people now living in the Klang Valley? And if every single one of them gave one ringgit, there's our operational costs covered. So I think maybe the saddest thing for me is that those who ask for our help the least are very often the people who also contribute the most.
Who make up the rest of the staff that work at the SPCA? Are there any others working on a full-time basis?
Oh, yes. We are a hard-working dozen people. We actually employ three vets full-time to run our clinic, Cumbiri. We have animal welfare officers. We have administrators. But most of the nucleus of the group are animal welfare officers.
And do you have a steady stream of volunteers who are helping out at the shelter?
Yes. They're a small but very dedicated number. And one of the things we've done in the last 18 months is put into place a proper volunteer training program. So now if you want to volunteer with the SPCA, we actually train you. And then you're more used to us and you're also can be more confident with the animals when you're working with them.
Is there a criteria before you even get to the part where you get trained, or, you know, is it just kind of a willingness and a dedication to be there?
Willingness, dedication, love animals, be very happy to get dirty.
Yes. So you mentioned earlier, was it 600 animals, you know, at sort of at the peak of
yes.
the SPCA Selangor's intake? The number of animals who need help, you know, it's just overwhelming. We see it on a day-to-day basis. Every shelter, every organization battles with this issue of overcrowding. Nobody really wants to turn someone away, and yet. So how do you at the SPCA deal with this?
Okay, you're absolutely right. It is an ongoing battle and the toughest part of the job, because if we could help everybody, we would. We have to do two things, and this is where my head is on the chopping block for this, is that we have to make a decision. We can't get everything in. We ask as much as we can for the general public to help us. You know, if you know that you've got to surrender your dog or you can't keep your cat anymore, don't turn up and say, look, you've just got to take it. Give us a call and say, look, I'm moving into an apartment. I can't have my dog. Will you look after it? So help us. If you have strays on the street, believe it or not, those strays do not want to be saved. Let us help you to neuter them so we don't keep breeding, but let them stay there. Let them just become the neighbourhood dogs. So I think there's lots of ways in which the public can help us. And the reality is we will never put down or put to sleep a viable animal. And I think one of the things we've been hit with many years is that, you know, we are not a no-kill shelter. Well, the answer is no viable animal will ever be put down. But if it's sick, injured, in pain, if we can't provide it with a viable home, then we may have no choice. How are we ever going to change this? I think it comes back to how do we prevent things happening as opposed to fighting constantly the tsunami of the unwanted.
And that issue of prevention, have you found it a difficult battle to fight here in Malaysia?
Yes. Because it requires a very educated approach to what animal welfare is all about. I mean, look, our Facebook and a dozen other sites throw constantly the sad pictures at everybody. And that makes people want to, oh, never mind, we'll just save that one. But that doesn't stop yet more coming. So we've got all the ones that, please, you know, don't buy if you can adopt. Think twice, think three times before you say you'll take an animal unless you're absolutely sure. And, you know, help us in every way possible to just not let these very difficult animal situations happen, because they make us all cry. Even when you do it professionally, there are some horror stories that we're all struggling to cope with.
So how then do you kind of decide and weigh things out in terms of accepting or turning away animals?
Right. The answer is we don't actually have a criteria that says they must be a certain age or a certain type, okay? As far as we're concerned, if it's a 7-year-old neglected dog, if it's a kitten, if it's a, abused rabbit. Everybody, as far as we're concerned, is the same. We literally try to be fair, as in, if we are full, you don't have the one special dog we'll take anyway. We are full. And that's what our policy has been all along. And unfortunately, it's filled with flaws and it doesn't always work. But we don't believe that it's right that just because you turned up with an older dog, we say to you, oh, well, actually, that's not as adoptable as the lady who's brought in four puppies. So we are very determined that we will be very fair about those kind of things.
And if the animal needs immediate or serious medical care, what do you do?
Well, we have on-site vets. So we're able to ascertain basically what is happening. You know, is the animal actually dying of a communicable disease like parvo or distemper? Are we looking at an accident victim with very severe injuries, in which case, you know, our vets can do a basic examination. Now, look, we are a no-frills clinic, so we don't have X-ray machines. We don't have MRIs. You know, we can't go and do big flash things. If the rescuer is willing to support us by saying, okay, what do we do next? We will then organise for them to perhaps to take to a private vet or a university hospital. And there's fantastic people out there who are willing to invest a lot of money in trying to help a rescue dog. If we feel the dog is in very high levels of pain and there is very little hope, then what we do is put the dog peacefully to sleep.
And do you put a time limit on animals in your care? You know, are you forced to? Okay.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why we are very, if we said, okay, we'll bring, like the councils do, you know, we'll bring the dog in or we'll bring the cat in, we'll keep it for 10 days. If we can't find a home, then we'll put it down. If we did something like that, we could actually have far more animals through our doors. But that's not, as we see it, our purview. So once the animal is in, it is with us until we can safely rehome it.
Right. So I guess for me, what I was thinking was more along the lines of, do you ever have to say, okay, we will take care of this dog with the broken leg up until the point that its leg is healed, and then hopefully you can take it back and foster it until somebody can adopt it. But I suppose that requires cooperation on the part of the rescuer as well.
We're far more likely to say, will you look after it because it needs basically a family. When the dog has healed its broken leg, then what we will do is we will help you get it rehomed.
I'm speaking today with Lorna Fisher, Chief Operating Officer at SPCA Selangor. We're discussing the work that they do, as well as the need for an animal welfare law in Malaysia. Up next, Lorna's views on spaying and neutering your pets on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me in the studio today is Lorna Fisher, Chief Operating Officer at SPCA Selangor. We are discussing the work that they do and the need for an animal welfare law here in Malaysia. And Lorna, are you an advocate for spaying and neutering your pets?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, please. Yes.
I know, as am I. But for the unbelievers, why?
The sad fact is, if I can tell a little story, I had a lovely man come in the other day and he'd brought with him a cat that had actually been run over and it's injured its leg. He's a retired Chinese gentleman. He mentioned that he was an ardent Buddhist and right up to starting to rescue cats believed that it wasn't right that you should neuter any animals because it wasn't natural. Now that he's been in the rescue business for 6 months, he is now an ardent advocate of neutering. And that's what really brings it home to all of us. It does your animal no harm. It gives it a much more relaxed and comfortable life. And it's going to solve the problem. 85% sterilization in the country is what is needed before we can make any difference.
And I think if you have no intentions of, you know, if you don't want a litter of puppies or a litter of kittens in your home anyway, then what's the difference? And yet people, I don't know, it's a strange leap of logic that some people fail to grasp.
There are some very strange, we've had people say, oh no, I've been told if I neuter my German Shepherd, it won't bark anymore. Mm-hmm. So we've had some really interesting, will it make my cat gay? We've had some wonderful ones. And I think
those are classic.
That's exactly. And well, actually, I was wondering how you would know. But the reality is that it actually, no. I mean, sex for animals, sorry, it's nothing to do with love. It's a complete biological need. And if an animal has that biological need and it isn't allowed to follow it through, then in actual fact, what you've got is a stressed and miserable animal. So take the problem away.
And moving on to the issue of adoption, which is going to be, you know, a wide-ranging one. So what resources do you utilize to find homes for shelter animals at the moment? You know, is it social media, Pet Finder? How are we getting these animals
all
adopted?
All and every. So we have, yes, we're on Pet Finder. Yes, we have Facebook. We've also got all the animals on a portfolio on our website. I think I'd really like to say to everybody, we put a lot of time and man hours into running a managed adoption program. Every single one of our animals is socialized, handled, assessed. So we're not offering you totally unknown and quantities. The other thing we do is we do roadshows. You know, we go out and about and we introduce people to the animals. And that's also part of our education portfolio, to show that, you know, these are actually very easily handleable. And, you know, we've even got a mascot cat now that comes everywhere with us and walks about in front of the dogs. Sir Clive, very important cat.
As you kind of referenced there, a lot of people have a preconceived notion that shelter animals are going to be difficult animals, that they come with a certain amount of baggage. Do you find this to be an issue? You know, are there some animals that really struggle to be re-socialized or socialized at all?
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why we put every animal through an assessment program. And if I realize within the first week that really this animal is never going to be a stay-at-home dog or a happy cat to be living in a house. And then what we do is we actually look for the homes. You know, we have people who take dogs out to orchards. We have two or three farming groups that are wonderful people who will actually put semi-feral animals into their farms. So they feed them, but the dogs are allowed to roam. The cats are allowed to basically live the life of a wild cat. They're neutered. They're not going to harm anybody. They don't disturb livestock, but they live. To me, the most important thing is that animal living the life it wants to lead, not the life we think it should?
The issue of cruelty to animals is as much to do with the relationship or perhaps the wrong fit, I think, of people to animals. So while we can deal with animal behavior and trying to get animals to live the lives they want, we also need to look at the other side of the equation, right? The people involved in this. What questions should people be asking themselves before they consider adopting a pet?
How much money do you have and how much time do you have? And that sounds very clinical, but that is number one. Because in the end, even if you take on a mutley, as we call them, a mixed breed animal, the reality is you're not going to have half as much in the way of vet bills and so on as you probably will with a purebred animal, but you've still got to cover vaccinations. You've still got to feed the animal properly. And then the other one is time. But I say to people, making time for a pet, you should also look at as being a life decision that's probably as much for you as it is for the pet. Like if you say, I haven't got time for hobbies, I haven't got time for pets, I haven't got time for my family, I haven't got time, then maybe the secret is what you do need is you do need to go and get a cat or a dog and reevaluate what you're working for.
Do you have a screening process for potential pet adopters in that case?
Yes, we do. Not in a sort of, you know, we don't, it's not like getting a mortgage on your house. But certainly what we do is we want to know, okay, where are you living and what sort of lifestyle have you got? So that doesn't mean we say, okay, you're living in an apartment. In that case, you must have a very small fluffy dog. If you also happen to be a cycle rider, you do hash harriers, you are a personal trainer, then you can still have a very active dog and live in a condo. If you are an older person, then you have a dog with a calmer energy. So that's what we're looking for is, you know, what's the purpose behind having an animal and what sort of lifestyle can you offer? Young children, very different animal needed if you've got young children in the family compared to everybody, an adult.
And do you ever get situations where people return the pets they've adopted where the fit really just wasn't right?
Yes. And in fact, we follow up. Every one of our adopters, we will call you a couple of weeks into the adoption and then 6 months later and just basically say, how's everything going? And if you have problems, that's what we want, is we want a relationship that says before it becomes an issue, let's help you solve it.
Do you feel that there is a bias against mixed breed animals? And what is your response to that? Because I think for some reason, a lot of us have been marketed the idea of growing up with, for example, a lassie. You know, that's the idea. When we get a dog, it's going to look like this, and you know, or a Dalmatian. You know, Disney has a lot to answer for.
Yes.
So, you know, do you find that there is still an unwillingness to kind of live with or love mixed breed animals?
It is a very interesting thing that it's all about trends. And isn't it a really interesting thing that right at the moment, if you go to the UK or you go to Australia or America, the trend is for mixed breed dogs. You know, what they're looking for is, we call them our Mutleys, but the uniqueness. You know, one of our bylines is there's no two the same. Now here, I think there are still people who buy based on more like a status symbol thing. So now it's kind of, where did I get it from? And it's an accessory.
How much was it even?
Talk about that. And look how many certificates it's got. And for people who have got into that place, I know this sounds very cynical of me, but please remember now that just about everybody has a really good Canon laser printer. So unless that certificate actually gives you a registration number that you can trace back to a kennel club, I wouldn't trust the certificates too much. But yes, that's what happens. Heaven help us, but at the moment, the biggest trend in this country with the big dogs is huskies.
Which is, considering our weather.
Think of everything about a husky, and no, it doesn't fit into tropical suburbia.
So with that then, what are your thoughts on pet shops and puppy breeding mills? Because they are at least in part responsible for trends, I think.
Agreed. And I guess what I would do is flip that and say, if you go to a pet shop and you see this cute little Shih Tzu puppy, if you cannot get the telephone number of the breeder and you can't go and visit the breeder, don't buy the puppy. Now, that's huge. If everybody did that, the only pet shops that would actually sell puppies would be, or kittens, would be people who actually knew they were using bona fide breeders. And there are pet shops, proper good practice pet shops that do that. The reality is, puppy mills, there is no excuse for them whatsoever, except they make money. So the secret is, as the old saying goes, if the buying stops, the money stops. And if the buying stops, so will the practice.
So before we move on then, last thoughts on this. Why should people adopt from animal shelters?
What? There's the moral reason, which is, you know, you're looking at an animal that was put in this planet, not necessarily being wanted by anyone. Could have been wanted and now no longer is. So there's a moral reason. And the other one is there are way too many, way too many. So before we start encouraging people to breed even more, what about helping the ones that are already here?
We've all read horror stories of animals being cruelly mistreated, abused, sometimes killed. We've seen the videos. It makes headlines every few months. What laws, if any, currently exist to protect animals from abuse from humans?
Well, we do have an Animal Welfare Act. And at the moment, just starting its first parliamentary session, is the new Animal Welfare Bill. The new Animal Welfare Bill could genuinely revolutionise what we can do about cruelty in Malaysia. At the moment, the fines are very small. At the moment, you can't do jail time. You can't stop people owning a pet if they've been really cruel. So you put all that together and people just shrug their shoulders and say, well, what does it really matter? What I say is, let's look at it this way. When you see those kind of videos and those kind of pictures, how does that reflect on the society we live in? And that's probably more important.
Do you feel that the relevant local authorities take animal abuse cases seriously in our country?
I don't think it's one of their top priorities, because I don't think that there at the moment are enough people that are saying, you know, this is wrong and it's a reflection on our society that we're not willing to accept. Having said that, more and more people are beginning to care.
And what role does the Department of Veterinary Services Malaysia and the Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry Ministry play in all this, in the setting of the new laws and new acts?
Right. The DVS is actually the one that leads it. So we, as the SPCA, we go in and our inspectorate will actually look at abuse cases. But if we've got to now then turn that into a proper legal case, we do it through the DVS. So we work hand in glove with the DVS. In fairness to the DVS, it is not that they don't want to prosecute, but let's everybody bear in mind, if you put the picture on Facebook, actually it means nothing. What matters is, did you make a police report? Are you willing to step forward as a witness? Are you willing to actually allow us to create a legal case? And in most cases, people are not.
So with this new law then, are we going to see those heavier fines? Are we going to see...
Yeah, heavier fines, jail time. An ability to confiscate an animal, which at the moment we don't have.
And is that something that... So that's an interesting point, because you will see some movements advocating for confiscating of animals. Mm. You know, you will see people sort of independently of their own volition sort of going in and removing animals from properties. What's the SPCA's stance on this?
As a private citizen, if Lorna has had enough and she decides to sneak into her neighbour's garden and take away the abused dog that's chained up, then let's hope I don't get caught. As an officer of the SPCA, it is against the law, and while I'm wearing this T-shirt, I can't do it.
Just to be clear then, this law, this law that will hopefully allow for that and, you know, protect Lorna should she be caught, it covers all animals and not just companion animals. Is that accurate?
That's correct, yes. The new bill covers agricultural animals, pet animals, and it basically plugs up the holes for the wildlife as well.
And while the gazettement of this law is obviously a very welcome development, how can we ensure that the law is going to be enforced effectively?
Okay. Well, the first is public. The public opinion is very strong. If we can actually put more cases forward, because in the end, if somebody who runs an abusive boarding house or an abusive pet shop is actually caught, fined, jailed, and told they will never be allowed to do that again, and we make a big fuss about it. Now, all those bad practice shops out there have now got something they've got to seriously think about. But if we don't start to actually get cases that we can prosecute, then nothing's going to change. And we've all got to work together to actually be willing to not turn a blind eye. And if we're going to not turn a blind eye, then I've said time and time again to people, it's the end of every education talk I ever do, which is never be part of the problem, be part of the solution. And if we all look at how we can help to solve problems rather than just jump up and down and yell and scream because we've seen a terrible picture and it shouldn't happen, if we can keep on finding ways to solve the problems, then we're all going to have a much happier community with lots of happy animals in it.
Which is a perfect lead-in to my next question, actually, because aside from harsher penalties, which this this act has, there is that kind of balance between, you know, wanting to be preventive and having to be punitive, I suppose.
Yes.
And this is more punitive in nature. And, you know, it's more along the lines of, okay, so somebody's done this. We've punished them appropriately. Hopefully they don't do it again. And hopefully people see this and then they choose not to do it. But aside from this, you know, leaving out the fact that there's punishment, how can we change people's poor attitudes towards the animals that kind of share our space and our homes and our lives?
I think it's fair to say, you know, we're already doing it. As I said, I've been here in Malaysia for 15 years. And if 15 years ago, I'd have said to anybody, where's the nearest dog park? What they'd have all done is laughed. Now we have several parks that welcome dogs. And they welcome dogs who have responsible owners who pick up after their dog and make sure that their dog is not going to hurt anybody else. So every single person who owns a dog and owns a cat, by doing the right thing and by showing that actually having animals in our space, in fact, improves our community, we can safely say that we have pet-friendly condos. And what stands out in a pet-friendly condo is people know each other. They babysit each other's animals. There's a whole community spirit. We have tamins that have come forward and become pet-friendly tamins, and they are friendlier to each other because of it. Reality is that pets actually make us better people. So if we're looking after our pets well, we're normally looking after our spouses, our children, and our community too.
So if members of the public want to step forward and help you, what help do you need at the moment? Is there a wish list?
Yes, there would be a wish list, which is, please could we find a way to fund everything we want to do? So I have to say that our plea always is, we are constantly fundraising. If you're willing to contribute to the work of SPCA Selangor, you can go onto our website, our Facebook, and we would love you to help by basically contributing funds. Are you willing to run a fundraising event? Are you willing to support us by providing sponsorship for all kinds of things, ranging from new office furniture right the way through to helping us feed our animals? And if you can contribute our time, that's great, because we need volunteers. We also need, and this is a very special group of people, we need fosterers. These are people who say, I'm willing to bring an orphaned animal into our house for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 month, get it back on its feet, get it more adoptable, and then be able to help it find a home. Because honestly, the thing I think people often forget is we are not a permanent centre. We are a refugee centre. We are all the time saying, the more animals we can put out, the more animals we can bring in, and the more animals we can help. So those are the three things. Help us raise money. Help us by being willing to give a donation. Help us by giving time. Help us by willing to support an animal for a period of time so we can adopt it.
And because I'm sure, this is a question on people's minds, are donations to the SPCA tax exempt?
Absolutely, every single one. So if you're facing $1 million tax bill this year, then you give it to us instead, because I'm sure we could spend it wisely.
And so how can we reach out to you with, you know, our time, our money and so on?
Okay, well, if you check out our website, which is www.spca.org.my, there you can actually find out all the details of how you can come forward as a fundraiser, a volunteer and a fosterer. You can call us. Now, our landline, we have 4 lines in and we're very often very busy. So forgive us if you can't get us the first time around. But you can call us on 03-4256-5312. And then please check out our daily goings-on at our SPCA Selangor Facebook.
Thank you very much for your time, Lorna. I've been speaking with Lorna Fisher, Chief Operating Officer at SPCA Selangor. We've been discussing the work that they're doing, as well as the new animal welfare law here in our very own country. You have been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.